Yes, it is podcast day. Hello. Thank you for tuning in. Great to have your company. Another bumper show ahead for you. And alongside me to go through it all is Simon Hill. Hello to you, Simon.
Good to see you, Garby. How are you? Any wedding this weekend?
No, a couple of A-League games, so I was busy, but flying from Melbourne to Adelaide.
Good stuff.
Involved in football, so plenty to talk about. Thoroughly enjoyable. And I was alongside our special guest today on Friday night, and John Cosmina. Hello, Cozzy.
Garby, how are you, mate? Simon?
Good to see you, Cozzy.
Been a while.
Yeah.
Oh, we sort of pass in the corridors of whatever stadiums we have.
We're ships in the night.
Yeah, I know.
Great to have you here, mate. I think you've done a podcast this season, maybe
At least one.
Great to have you back.
Maybe two, but no, it's good to be back.
Have you been, mate?
I reckon he's got a lot of gold saved up for us as well.
Yeah, I got the feeling. I was very excited when I heard that we had Cozzy for this week. Do you have some gold up your sleeve? How are you feeling about football and life at the moment, Coz?
Look, life's always good because I'm still breathing. I remember, remember Frank Arick, he used to ask Frank how he was. And Frank started coaching the national team, I think he was 52. And, as he got on a bit, he used to say, Frank, how are you, mate? And he said, I'm still breathing. And it's true. And I'm in my 60s now and I'm starting to feel that way.
You look fresh. 60, they say, is the new 50. You look fresh, mate.
I went for a morning walk at Bondi.
Well,
that'll do it.
That'll put a smile on anyone's
beautiful
face.
Beautiful day down the beach this morning. It was fantastic.
Fantastic. All right. Well, there were elements of Saturday night that were fantastic, others that weren't. But let's start with the football.
Some rare open space. It's not a great cross. It might drop here for Ninkovic. Deflected! In it goes! Sydney FC, in the third minute of stoppage time, scored through Milos Ninkovic. It's just his second of the season.
They were enjoying themselves, the fans in the Cove, and it was a pretty good game of football at the SCG. There are other matters which we'll get to, of course, regarding the pitch. But let's talk about the game because I guess it lived up to expectations to an extent. There was a lot riding on it, and the actual contest, as you called, Simon, was pretty enthralling.
It was. Given the conditions, it was a very good game of football, I thought. So first 20 minutes, Sydney FC very fast out of the blocks, zipped the ball around on that difficult surface, took the lead, an absolute banger from Brandon O'Neill.
Yeah, what a goal.
Victory showed why they're champions. They readjusted, got back on level terms relatively quickly. And then second half, I have to say, I thought they were the better side. They certainly created the better chances. There weren't too many for either team. And can probably consider themselves, I think, a little bit unlucky to come away with nothing because they readjusted to Sydney's threat, down the flanks in particular in the first half, much better in the second 45. And had Toivonen finished that opportunity, had one or two others gone the right way. Kamsoba had a chance late on. It just wasn't their night. But, overall, apart from the obvious stuff that we're going to talk about, I thought the actual game was pretty good.
How big might that be for Sydney, Cozzy, come finals time?
Well, very big because it was, second spot's up for grabs. I mean, there's three games left. You wouldn't really expect Perth to falter, although Sydney do play Perth. Are they good enough to get a result against them? They've beaten them once this season. They can do that, but I think, you want to finish as high as you can. And while mathematically the premiership is still alive, Sydney have got something to play for. And then also you want second spot. You want to finish as high up the ladder as possible as well for Champions League qualification. And it just makes life easier in the finals as well. So, it was an important game for them. Also, clean sweep. Victory have beaten them twice. There's been three big blues in succession that Sydney have lost. That's a big turnaround for where they were a season or so back. They lost one last year. They've lost the two this season. And for them, there's a psychological hurdle they had to overcome. So that was important from that aspect as well on Saturday night.
The gap between second and third is now 4 points. So Sydney have a bit of a buffer in terms of, snaring that all-important top two spot. It's 6 points to the glory. So the Premier's plate is all but secured. So a very big win for Steve Corica's side, but it came at a cost for everyone really in the game on Saturday night with the pitch, which was an absolute disaster, and we still await word on Terry Antonis and how bad he is. If it is an ACL, well, the fallout will continue. That's going to be horrible news, but it's just a messy situation, and we're still waiting to hear if Sydney are going to move their game with the Glory in 11 days' time from the SCG. The word is that's quite likely.
Well, I mean, the one thing is for certain, you can't play that game on that pitch. Obviously, they've got a few weeks before that happens, so maybe it'll improve. But, you know, I saw the statement put out by the SCG Trust on Sunday, which said they had 50 events there in March. 50. You can't play league, union, football, AFL, cricket, goodness knows, concerts, whatever, monster trucks, whatever they play or have at the SCG. You can't do all of that stuff and expect the pitch to remain in decent condition. Obviously, for our game, things are a bit different because our sport is played mainly on the floor.
Yep.
The others are played predominantly with the ball off the floor. That's not to say it doesn't present its own problems for those sports, but I'm only interested in football. Long term, you know, this is bigger picture stuff, isn't it, Cozzy? We need our own stadiums. It's as simple as that. And this is why, to extend this out a little bit more, now we'll talk about this in more detail later on, but this new league's working group, we've got to get this independent A-League over the line so the owners can start investing in their clubs, making a bit of money back so that they can invest in the game and their club. And hopefully, eventually, we can get to the point where we get our own stadiums. Then the pitches and everything else is not a problem. I'm still at a loss as to why Sydney FC knew that this was going to happen for 3 years. And obviously, they've done deals with like our Oval, Jubilee Stadium, SCG. Why would you not choose one of those boutique venues and say, look, we're going to be here for 3 years. Let's do a deal whereby we can put in some temporary stands and become your major tenant for those 3 years. I know there are other rugby league clubs and union clubs who've got, you know, their own issues as to where to play as well. That's up to them. I'm not interested, with respect, in the other sports. I'm only interested in what football does. And make a boutique venue that is going to be home for 3 years. I mean, ideally, Sydney FC should have their own boutique stadium. That's the long-term solution. Yeah. In the interim, I don't know what you do. If it's not the SCG, is Leichhardt Oval available? Is Jubilee Stadium available? I mean, this is ridiculous that 15 years down the line, we're still having these conversations and debates. And just one more point on this. You know, I was at Central Coast Stadium on Sunday for the Mariners' Glory game. They are the only professional sporting club on the Central Coast. 15 years they've been in existence. They've won a championship, they've competed in Asia, premierships, produced Socceroos, aplenty. They still run out every home match to a backdrop of a stadium that has the seats of a non-existent rugby league club in the Bears. How is that possible after 15 years? That they're still not valued enough to have their seat, their name on the damn seats? That's the lack of influence that we have as a sport. And, you know, I think it was last year, they actually renamed the stadium Graham Park after some Olympian, which is great. You know, no problem. He's from the Central Coast. Fantastic. Graham Park, they renamed it in honour of an Olympian, somebody from another sport. Matty Ryan, one of the most famous Mariners exports ever, played at Wembley at the weekend in the FA Cup semi-final. Did anybody think about calling it Ryan Park for the weekend?
Mille Jedinak is captain of Socceroos, played in three World Cups.
Jedinak Park, anybody? We just don't think of these things. And yet, when an Olympian from the Central Coast wins a gold medal, we're falling over ourselves to accommodate the other sports. When is football coming first?
You've hit the nail on the head there, Simon. That is the biggest issue we've got. I mean, we've never, ever had the respect that the game deserves. And it's always been tough in Australia. We've always been third or fourth cab off the rank. We've been the unwanted relative that turns up at the barbecue every now and then and gets shoved in the corner and ignored. You know, you've got the other gang over there, which is league, union and Aussie rules. And soccer, football is just the poor relation. And that's because the other codes are frightened of the power of the game. And until we can get some sort of respect, and you talk about these standalone football stadiums, they're going to spend a bucket load of money on redeveloping the football stadium or Allianz or whatever you want to call it. Why can't they purpose build a standalone football stadium for Sydney FC, for the Wanderers, for one of the, you know, say what Sydney FC maybe can have their own eventually, but where are they going to build it?
Barton Park.
Well, Barton Park was mooted as a as a central hub, a football hub, years ago. It's basically the stand there is condemned. Now, St. George Stadium, it used to be called St. George Stadium. The stand is condemned. It's roped off. You can't get access to it. St. George Football Club still play there, apparently. I haven't been there for years, but I've got a lot of fond memories from that place. There was talk of redeveloping Barton Park, making it a hub, building a 20 or 30 room motel and have a conference centre there and everything, and move, I think it was called the Australian Soccer Federation or whatever it was before the FFA came alive, and move them there and have your Socceroo camps there, have intensive training camps there, base your national teams out of that centre. Then it was talked about when Lowy came on board, the Lowy family with the FFA, that they would move to ES Marks Field. That got kiboshed. And yet that's a great venue as well. It's in the heart of Randwick. It's a perfect location. Parking's always a problem there. But that we need to have our own stadium. We need to have a football-specific stadium. Not that rugby league play on it, not that rugby union play on it. Soccer.
Yeah.
And that's it. Beginning and end of story.
But to do that, we have to start speaking up for ourselves.
We don't.
And fighting for our game. 1.8 million people, part of the football family, by far the biggest. They have got to mean something, and that their voices have to be heard.
And our board needs to unite the football community so that they feel empowered enough to go to government with enough confidence to make it happen, basically.
Well, could we?
At the moment, they don't feel powerful enough because the game is so fractured. They're saying we have to sort out our own backyard first. How can we go to government when we've got these problems? So sort out our issues first, and then I'm with you 100%, of course.
Garby, we've been trying to sort out our issues for as long as I can remember. I've had this same discussion not long after the NSL started, and that was 1977, and we've got the same issues now. You know, we've all of a sudden, you know, everyone wanted a different face of football. They wanted a different way to set it up, and the states and the A-League clubs got together. Now the states and the A-League clubs are fighting. How are you going to resolve this?
Yeah.
Constitutionally, well, the game needs to change. Exactly. Well, you don't need state federations.
Make it a unitary model.
It's a level of management we don't need. There's a whole bunch of – a separate bunch of blazer wearers, basically, sitting there as chairman or CEOs or whatever. There's a whole lot of money and infrastructure that's being wasted.
And self-interest then takes over and causes more problems.
Yep.
Anyway, we'll wait and see what happens with Sydney's next game. Look, for mine, it's negligence from the SCG to think they could have that many events on that pitch. Rugby union is a major problem because of the scrums. It just digs things up constantly. It's not their fault. They've got to play their sport. But why on earth are the SCG allowing so many events? They've got to say, this is not right. Please take your game somewhere else.
Good for the bank balance, isn't
it? Yeah, it is, but we can't satisfy all of our customers, basically. They've got a deal. Well, you know, unfortunately, they're not satisfying it.
Yeah, it's a good point.
They've got to say, for mine, please go play somewhere else, and we're happy to scrap that part of the contract. I mean, I think that will happen with the Sydney FC game against Perth. Speaking of the glory, they eased to victory over the Mariners. Geez, that looked like a training drill. It really did, especially the second half. It was like attack against defence.
It was business as usual for Perth.
I mean, honestly, I reckon they've had training sessions that are more strenuous than that game.
They probably have. Look, the Mariners, for all their efforts, they're huffing and puffing. They just can't blow anything over. They're almost a naive footballing side. And they just get caught out so easily. You look at the first goal that Perth scored, but the interplay as well and how they constructed that. But they defended it poorly when it got to the back third of the pitch. The Mariners they just did not defend well. And it's whether it was Alan Stajic or whether it was Mike Mulvey, it didn't make any difference. The same mistakes are still happening. And that comes down to probably the players that you've got there. The Mariners is not a go-to club anymore, as it used to be. They did win premierships. They have won championships. They've produced Matty Ryans, produced some great players. But at the moment, they're picking up the guys that can't get a contract elsewhere, and it's not taking anything away from them as footballers. You know, they bought some players in. It hasn't worked. Ross McCormack experiment sounded great on paper. Did not work at all.
Tommy Orr injured.
Yep, for most of the season. You know, it's a pity because it's, you know, how the mighty have fallen. But what do you do with the Mariners? Now, you talked about Graham Park, and actually my first international for the Socceroos was at Graham Park.
Yeah, it was known as Graham Park, wasn't it?
And it had a wooden fence around it. It was great, and a small stand. That was a long time ago. But where do they go from here, the Mariners? What do they do? Do they – and I'll throw one in the mix here, and I did mention this the other week. Do they get swallowed up as part of Newcastle?
I'd like to think.
Or you keep them standalone.
No, I mean, to me, I think that would be a retrograde step because, all right, it's only 15 years, but it is 15 years of history, and they do have a very proud history in that short period of time.
Passionate fans.
So, you know, what we're trying to do with the A-League, at least this is how I read it, is we're trying to build for future generations. You can't do that if you're ripping clubs up and starting again and relocating them and... You know, I was against even getting rid of North Queensland Fury and even the Gold Coast. I know that they didn't
work. I agree with you, especially now the Cowboys have got a $250 million stadium
Once you've gone there, you don't just throw the towel in and go, oh, it's not worked, so we'll go somewhere else. You've got to leave those clubs in place and let them grow and mature historically for the next generations to enjoy. That's why we all... a lot of us have European clubs, because your father supported that club, your grandfather did. History takes time. So you can't just rip these clubs up and start it. And certainly not one with such a proud history as the Mariners. Right. And as I say, they've got a perfect stadium, if only they had the right name on the seats.
I agree with the seating issue, but you talk about the European history and how, you support your father's club or your grandfather's club or whatever. Are Australian football fans as rusted on as they are elsewhere in the world?
Well, they're not at the moment because the league's still new.
Well, it's 15 years old. There's a bit of history there.
Well, that's why people do still turn up. I mean, we have built a core. All right, the average attendance this year is not where we'd like it
to be. It's not great with the other sports either.
But there's, exactly.
As much as they'd like to tell you differently.
There's still a core there that is solid enough. And once this independent A-League hopefully happens, we can build on that again. The big events still, I was in Perth last week. Nearly 18,000 for Perth against Victory. The derbies, when the weather's okay, and the stadium's all right.
Socceroos game
still
for
turn
the World
up well.
Cup.
Socceroos game, grand finals.
Watch that.
They still turn
that's
up.
That's a
still
different thing, though. We're talking about your bread and butter, your week to week stuff, and that's where we need to get the clubs.
Yes,
need
sure.
the punters to turn up. Adelaide had 8,500. Historically, the Wellington away game or your Wellington home game for any club in the A League's always your budget for your lowest crowd.
It's an enormous challenge. Look, we are getting away from the weekend stuff. That's okay. It's an enormous challenge. I think it's been an issue for a long period of time, Cozzy, since you were kicking around, is uniting the people who love the game and turning them into Australian fans. Mm. For mine, the way we've got to find a way to get the people who play every Sunday and go to the NPL games to follow the A-League. That's our main challenge. We don't need to worry, for mine, about attracting guys from and girls from other sports. Who cares about that? Because we've got 1.8 million people who are engaged in the game. The stats tell us that. There's enough there. Focus on getting the football community together to follow their A-League team. You're not going to get every single person. You won't. But we can get a whole lot more than we have right now if we unite them and find a way to stop these fractures.
Remember, though, Garby, with respect, and look, I've just used the 1.8 million participation base as a reason as to why we should have better facilities, and I stand by that. But in terms of getting people through the gates, remember, a large proportion of that 1.8 million. A lot of people play the game just for fun. A lot of people play the game for fitness or because their mates do. So whilst, yes, they are connected to the game, they're not necessarily dyed-in-the-wool football fans. I know this from... But you're probably the same. I played over 35s up until a few years ago, and you go down training on a Wednesday. I didn't move very much. You go down a train on a Wednesday. The conversation as you're putting your boots on and getting ready to train, it wasn't by and large about how Sydney had gone on the weekend or Victory or whatever. It was about rugby league or AFL or the Premier League or Real Madrid or... That connection is fragile. I agree we need to strengthen it, but I don't think it's as easy as just saying we've got 1.8 million people, therefore they should all be theoretically fans of the A-League. I don't think it's that straightforward.
As I said, you're not going to get everyone, but we've got to find a way to strengthen
that. Of course
that. That should be our focus. Focus on football for the next 12 to 24 months. Get the football community
and the
together. Then worry about getting fans from outside the coast.
Yes.
That's what your club's responsibilities have to be. They need to connect with the local football community.
Yes.
It's got to be the responsibility of the A-League clubs, and they haven't. And historically, and we all know because we've all been around since the beginning of the A-League, Garby, a bit of a later entrant, but certainly...
I was there for the beginning.
Simon, you know what it's like, and the clubs have had a fractured relationship with the local football community. Mm. I know with Adelaide United, when we set that up back in 2003, 2004, the last season of the NSL... The first thing we did was connect with the local football community because West Adelaide and Adelaide City, who'd been NSL participants before that, had lost contact with that community. And it worked. 17,500 at what is now Coopers in the first NSL match. And that stayed for quite a while. And it's still a good connection there. Sydney FC never had a great connection with their football community, which they worked hard to turn around. Wanderers had a great connection with the local community. It's how you get into that. And the problem is you've got all these kids that do play football, but their parents weren't football people.
Right.
Their parents were rugby league or rugby union or AFL people. The kids play football because of what they see on TV. They'd see the Messis and the Ronaldos and those sorts of guys because they're in the media all the time. So these kids want to be like that. But they're accidental supporters, the families. The kids are players because of the media, not because of local football clubs. And that's where we've got to build this next generation. These kids have got to come up and say, you know, I'm playing for the local football team, but I want to be a Sydney FC supporter.
Which is why we have to celebrate those success stories as a game. So we talked about the outside influences, but we have to do a lot better as a game to tell our own stories much better.
We've got a little bit political correspondent today, but on a bit of a tangent. Just to change tack slightly, Chris Economides' arm, how bad might that be? How bad might that be for the Perth Glory?
Yeah. I'm not quite sure how serious that is. I did hear something.
It looked dislocated.
Did look dislocated.
The glory of finding out, I've been told this afternoon. They still don't know. That could change the final series massively. I mean, he's that important for them.
He is. I mean, I was watching him yesterday, even if it was against the Mariners, and he does this every week. He is so comfortable and so composed on the ball. And he, sometimes you think he's holding it up a little bit too long, but he doesn't give it away, and he actually something else then develops. He gets into that front third of the pitch. He goes to Chris Economides. He has an impact more often than he doesn't. He makes something happen in the game. It's been mentioned, all right, if he's out, you've got Brendan Sandlab to come in, or you've got Diego Castro who came on for him.
Not a bad replacement, eh?
It's not a bad replacement, but is it better to have Diego Castro instead of Chris Economides, or is it better to have both?
Both.
Of course it is, and with Andy Keogh, and with Joel Kinnaezy, who's had a breakout season as well. He's been sensational this year.
And Fornaroli to come next year.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's going to be interesting. So you want Chris Economides, for Perth's sake, to be available for the finals. Shoulders can be tricky, but you can also manage them as well. Brendan Sandlab, who came on for Perth yesterday as well, had lots of issues with his shoulders over the course of the season, but he's managed to survive.
Could he do the famous Franz Beckenbauer and play in a sling in the grand final, like Beckenbauer did in the World Cup final? Remember that?
Yeah, it's
a bit tougher for a winger than a sweeper.
I don't know if you ever did your shoulder when you were playing, Cozzy, but that to me seems an injury. Oh, he's shown us the scars. Yeah, has done his shoulder. That seems to me to be an injury, and I think it's Louis Fenton who's had awful trouble with his shoulders. David Carney had it as well.
Yep.
Once it goes once, it seems to be a weak spot.
It is.
And you have to be careful with it.
Sander was the same. Sander did his in a game against Melbourne Victory, I think it was, playing for Sydney FC. I was coaching. And he was out for a while. Then he came back and he's done it again and he's done it again. He's done it a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And it is difficult. And you have the more surgery you have, the more you've got to have. The thing is, shoulders they're difficult things to fix. And they're so important in terms of how you move. It's just running.
Yeah.
You can't, when you do a shoulder and you have surgery, you can't do any training because there's so much stress goes through your upper body. If you're running or moving too much, you can't. There's a lot of stuff you can't do, so you lose fitness fairly quickly. So let's hope that Chris Economides isn't in too much trouble and he will be available for Perth for the final.
And it was so innocuous, wasn't it? He just fell on his shoulder. Hopefully we can't blame the pitch for that, though, because it looked pretty good in Gosford.
Anyway, that's the only concern from a glory win, another glory win that was really straightforward. Fantastic afternoon in Adelaide yesterday. Nice crowd, really nice atmosphere, and it was so eventful. If you had a better weekend or a more eventful weekend than Apostolos Stamatolopoulos, I dare say you're feeling a bit rusty this Monday because two goals and then a red card. In the space of 20 minutes, it was just chaotic. But he showed he's got a lot of talent, and when he does come back, he might be the man for Adelaide to fill that striker role, which has been such an issue for them.
Now, you'd wonder, looking at how he performed yesterday, and look, and I'll qualify this, saying he did well. and he took his goals well, but Wellington were poor defensively, unusually poor. Normally they've been a lot better than that, but they got outnumbered yesterday, and they were certainly positionally, they got themselves in a bit of trouble as well. But the thing is that Apostolos had to be there to finish those things off and all those moves off, and he did that. He did exceptionally well. So you've got to look at it and think maybe if Marco Kurtz had given him a little bit more time, and I know he's been in and out and he's been away with the Ollie Roos and everything else, had he had a bit more time, could he have been the solution to their goal-scoring problem?
I said at the start of the season, actually, I think it was the A-League launch that we held jointly, FFA and Fox, that I thought he might have a breakthrough season. It's not quite happened for him. But I like the look of him. He looks like a natural goal scorer to me. I think he's had a few weight issues. Is that right, Cozzy? He's had to drop a few kegs, which apparently did during the off-season. Then he's had some injuries and, as you say, been away with the Ollie Roos. But that obviously there is a roll up for grabs there. Jordi Thomason hasn't worked as yet. He still might do. Sometimes it takes foreigners a while to settle in. Baba Diawara.
Certainly does work.
I would imagine he's
finished.
Gone at the end of the season. George Blackwood's sort of in and out. He's done okay in patches. But I think that's Damatalopoulos' role for the taking if he wants it. And you look at that front three. I think Craig Goodwin played as a left back against Wellington. But that front three, that was the best balanced Adelaide attack I'd seen all season.
And Ben Halloran
on the
Halloran?
Right, Ryan Kitto on the left, and Stamatolopoulos
Goodwin
in the middle.
Goodwin on the left.
Well, Goodwin was further back.
No, yes, Kitto played underneath.
No, Kitto played underneath.
Kitto played underneath.
Right. Okay, there you go.
Look, it might have been a nice audition in front of Mark Rudin as well, if the rumours are true that Rudin's off to Western United. And we asked him about his future before the game, and he hardly said it was something that shouldn't be talked about. He said, we're keeping it in-house. Look, the drums are beating pretty strongly on that one. And Stamatolopoulos has been signed already by Western United. So it was handy for him to score a double in front of the coach. And Rudin missed the red card because he was so angry at his team's performance. He'd stormed off into the tunnel 5 minutes before halftime and missed the red card. So he wasn't aware of the danger that Stamatolopoulos brought in that regard. But a big win for Adelaide, and level now for that home elimination final, tied on points. So it's going to go right down to the wire to see who hosts that one.
They have to play Melbourne City as well.
And Melbourne City are still in the hunt for that because they had a big win, 4-1 over Brisbane. 20 goals over five games on the weekend. There were plenty of goals. They were able to score for Melbourne because Brisbane pretty much gave up. I mean, they're a rabble similar to the Mariners right now. But they scored some beauties. Richie Delatt, Shane Harrison and Riley McGree. Three fantastic goals.
Shane Harrison's starting to find his range, isn't he, in front of goal, which is good. I have to say again with City, as good as they were, and with the caveat that Brisbane obviously have had a very poor season, you just never know what next week is going to bring with Melbourne City, do you? They normally follow a performance like that where you think, right, okay, they're back in the groove. And they have got a good squad of players. We all know that. And then the week after, they normally drop their level, you know, by one or two. And you think, what's going on with City again? So, I mean, they're obviously going to make the six. I think that the top six now is pretty much done, given that Newcastle is the only team that can break into the top six. They've got Perth away next, which you wouldn't think they're going to get something there. So the top six is pretty much done. So now it's about jockeying for position, and in particular that fourth place and to get a home final.
What did you make of Melbourne City and Brisbane? I mean, you were there, Cozzy. Have they given up to you, the Raw?
No, look, they haven't given up. I actually spoke to Darren Davies.
He's trying.
Socially.
Yes,
he's trying really hard.
And I asked him that very question, and he said the boys haven't given up. They're just tired, and they are. When you're pushing it uphill as much as they have, and you've had to deal with all of the emotional turmoil that club has had, not just this season, but you go back to last as well. Mm. They've had lots of issues going back a couple of seasons now. It's been a sort of steady decline if you look at Brisbane Roar from greatness to where they are now, second bottom on the ladder and likely to stay there. So I don't think that the team have given up, but they've just run out of bodies. They've got a lot of injuries. You know, they've had players. They've lost Adam Taggart. They lost the other guy that went back to Greece. I can't remember his name.
Papadopoulos,
who was, had a 7-game suspension last season, hasn't played well, has been unfit this season.
Luke Devere has had injuries again.
Yeah, well, Luke's been, it's a pity because he was an unbelievable footballer when he was healthy, but he's just never been able to get back on the park consistently, and he has done. And Jack Hingett's done his knee. They've lost a number of
Connor
players.
O'Toole.
Yeah, broke his leg. So they've lost a number of good individuals that may have helped them be a little bit better than they are now. So nothing has gone right for that club. Whereas Melbourne City, you ask, I mean, Simon, you referred to them in our notes here as a Jekyll and Hyde. I'm not sure which is the good, the Jekyll or the Hyde. You know, maybe they need a bit more Mr. Hyde so they actually get a bit cranky and start to do things. They had some fire in their belly on Friday night. We questioned Harrison Delbridge on the pod afterwards. I asked him what had been talked about after their pathetic performance against the West Sydney Wanderers a week before. And they said, look, there was no finger pointing, but we talked about being accountable for your performances, being responsible. All these, you know, they're all buzzwords, which is great. But, I mean, why are you like that every week? This is what I don't get.
Yeah.
But why is it that you can be one week you're responsible, next week it looks like you don't give a rat's?
They need that because they don't have fans to keep them accountable. No, you know, because nothing against those supporters. They just don't have the numbers. They don't have that pressure that a Victory has, that a Wanderers fan group have, even with their crowds below. What? They're on them.
I played for a team, Garby, and you'll know who they are, Sydney City. We had no supporters. But that team was responsible every week. Yeah, you went out and you played to win every week.
Well, they need to have some people pointing the
So that down. Talks about the culture that exists within that club. And that's what you've got to look at.
Yeah.
And that you can – Warren Joyce, I feel sorry for him. I empathise with him, actually, because his nickname was Psycho when he played. And he's played 500 league matches. It's not a bad effort. And he's coached – he was 17 years at Man United, including a stint in Belgium as well. So the guy's got the runs on the ball. Whether you like him or you don't, or you like his methods or you don't, it's irrelevant. The guy's been around the game a long time. I mean, there's rumours that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to take him back to United now. So, you know, but he's not good enough for Melbourne City. So it must do his head in when you get players that one week look like they can beat – you know, Bayern Munich, the next week looked like they can't beat the local pub side.
I called a few of his games when he played for Burnley. That nickname, by the way, was well earned. Hey, I wanted to ask you...
As I found out when he stormed away from me.
Yes, exactly. I wanted to ask you a quick question, Cozzy. Interesting, I had a little chat with Alan Stajic on the pitch pre-game about the Mariners, and one of the things he pointed out to me was about with younger players, and I think it equally applies to Brisbane because I've had to play a few youngsters due to the injuries, etc. And he said that... So one of the issues is mental with these young kids, and he pointed out Kai Rowles. He said, look, he hasn't won an A-League game in like 28 matches. So that sort of gets into their head when you're coaching them to say, look, move into that position. And they're almost second-guessing themselves because they may have tried that before and it's not worked. And if you lose every week, does that just then become a big mental hurdle, particularly for younger players, where they're second-guessing themselves in terms of, am I actually doing the right thing? And, of course, in those split seconds during a game, that's when good opposition, as Perth were at the weekend, can take advantage.
Yeah, look, they do second guess, but also the thing is that kids now make a mistake and they'll make another one and another one. And the problem is with younger sides these days is that one player will make a mistake, but the next guy to come along doesn't actually fix a mistake, he makes another mistake as well. So you normally see mistakes. And if you look at a lot of the Mariners' goals and you want to talk about these younger blokes, you look at there'll be one, two, three, four mistakes in a row. You know, there's bad decision-making. And that comes back to how we've developed our players. And we could talk about this ad nauseum. You just go on for hours and hours about player development. And it's a tough one as well because young players aren't brought up the same as they were in my era. And for me, that's a hard thing to let go. But, you know, we were made to be accountable. You know, I had 16, 17-year-old, had real men give me a kick up the backside if I had a bad touch. You had to learn the hard way. Mm. Kids, you know, now it's a different world we live in. Younger players are brought up differently. They see a lot of stuff. And, you know, it's an interesting, and I'll be quick on this, but kids, younger players live off of YouTube clips. They see all of the great players in the world performing all these wonderful tricks on YouTube. They don't look at the whole 90 minutes of a game. You look at how we analyse a game these days. They're 10, 15-second clips. Mm. And that's how kids live on social media. They live on their phones. They live on laptops. That's how they play their football. They've grown up with and I used to talk about this with Mike Cockerell before he passed away. It's the PlayStation generation. PlayStation's been around 20 years. Most of your young kids coming through have had a PlayStation since they could basically use a computer.
But you still have examples like Miloš Ninković, just to pick one name out.
Numbers.
On Saturday, Ninković, okay, scored the winning goal. He was involved in all the attacking stuff as he normally is. But he doesn't neglect his duty defensively. He chases back. He makes challenges. He makes sure that he does his bit for the team. Yeah. And he's 33, 34. Yeah. So younger players must be, they must be looking at those players and going, well, that's the example.
They don't look at that. That's what I'm referring to when I say about these clips. Right. They look at all the attacking stuff. They don't look at the work you have to do off the ball. It doesn't matter how good a player you are on the ball. You've always got a job to do off the ball. Mm. And that's when I refer to, you only see the good bits. You don't. Do you see YouTube clips back to back of players defending? You don't.
No.
You see goals scored. Mm. You see tricks on the edge of the box. You see nutmegs, back heels.
Well, that's
all that
where
sort
good
of
coaching
stuff.
Comes into it, and they've got to be taught by people who know about all that.
But
stuff.
They don't like look. You. There's not a. Well, all right. Go back quickly to the curriculum. Is the word defend or defence actually mentioned in it? And I've talked to a lot of coaches, and we've all talked about this over the years. It is not even talked about, defending. Defending's what they call hidden learning, and you'll pick up how to do it. You don't.
Florian Berenguer.
I think that's a whole different podcast.
I think we've had about three different podcasts in one today. We'll get back onto the topics from the weekend. Florian Berenguer had a really good game for Melbourne City. That was his best game, definitely, albeit against weaker opposition. So hopefully he can pick up from where he left off on Friday night. Speaking of a lack of defending, there wasn't much in the Matildas game. We'll get onto that in a moment. But I've just had a text come through. I can tell you that all three of Oscar, Hulk and Elkerson are coming to Sydney for Wednesday night's game. Brilliant. Shanghai SIPG against Sydney FC. Champions League's back. The AFC won't pump it up, so let's do it here. Why would you not get down there? If you're a football fan, hopefully it's a nice night. Get down to Jubilee and watch three fantastic talents. Support Sydney FC. Go and enjoy Oscar in front of your very eyes and Hulk and Elkerson. How good will that be?
Don't forget Odil Akhmadov as well.
Of course,
he is a superb player, the Uzbekistani.
He really is. I'd love watching him at the Asian Cup.
Great side.
But Oscar, you've watched him in the Premier League for years and salivated over him. He's going to be on your doorstep.
Yeah.
Get there. So
good on you, Garby.
Really looking forward.
Good point.
Really looking forward to that on Wednesday. The Matildas, 5-3 defeat. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Going forward, they look really sharp. At the back, they've got some serious problems ahead of the World Cup against the best teams like the USA.
Yeah, look, they have. Ante Milicic has got a different philosophical approach to football to what Alan Stajic, a previous coach, had. He was a bit more disciplined in terms of how they set up defensively. Ante's come through the Ange Postecoglou era where you try and put your opposition on the back foot by you being on the front foot. But it shows that from a defensive point of view, you've still got to have that part. You've got to have your rest defence sorted. It's great to have possession, but if you're not organised at the back, I mean, when your team has a ball, you're still a defender and you've got to take a defensive role. You've got to be aware of what happens if it breaks down. Where's the ball? Where do I need to be in case we turn it over if we lose it here? And Pep Guardiola is massive on rest defence. And that's why Manchester City don't concede a hell of a lot. Or if they turn the ball over, they win it back fairly quickly because they organised. When they've got the ball, they're still looking at what they need to do from a defensive point of view so they don't get caught out, so they don't get caught in transition.
It's the new buzz term in football, rest defence.
Well, it's been around for years, but do you know what?
I remember Huss Hiddink at the 2006 World Cup watching the Socceroos train. First of all, 10 seconds. He used to bark it out every training session. 10 seconds, 10 seconds. You had to keep hold of the ball for 10 seconds. Right. And then when you lost it, 10 seconds, 10 seconds. You've got to get it back within 10 seconds. These are not new concepts, are they?
But, no, not at all. But see, so going back to the material, they do need to fix things up. I mean, you look at the fifth goal, that was a kick out from the American keeper that went straight over the top of everybody.
Long ball.
Two against two at the back, Pommy football. Two against two at the back, and they got through. And keeper got lobbed, and that was it. So, you know, you've got to get those things organised. That shouldn't be happening at this level.
Yep. The positives, Sam Kerr, another wonderful header, amazing. And Caitlin Ford's goal, she played purely in that number 10 role, and she seemed to relish it. The way she turned and ran at them, and she had Kerr spreading one way, and she had Devanna for the first goal for the Matildas.
Great finish from Lisa Devanna.
And she just seemed to love being in that zone where she had freedom.
Yeah, look, it's a different setup, and it is a more proactive attacking type of football. But you go to a World Cup, you've still got to be able to defend. It's no point in saying, yeah, we played great, but we lost.
I still think that I mean, I think they've got a puncher's chance at the World Cup, let me tell this. But are they one step behind the likes of the US, the Germans, maybe, dare I say, England, one or two others?
It seems that way at the moment. They're in the next bracket. Yeah. So, I mean, you would think they'd get through the group, although we've got Brazil. We could, and we've beaten them recently, so we could, you know, still top the group.
We seem as though
we're a quarterfinal team. At our best, a semi-final, but once you make the semis, anything's possible. So, you know, we're in that next bracket from what I understand and from what I've seen. So it's exciting, though. It's exciting because, you know, the USA had to lift their game and they are a genuine contender. So
look, the fact we scored three goals against a team like that is good.
Exactly.
So we've got it there. If you can just tighten up a little bit at the back, then all of a sudden it becomes a much tighter contest.
And the feeling is that things will improve under Ante Milicic. They will continue to grow. So there's no reason why they can't jump up to that next step by the time the World Cup in France comes around. A team called Watford will have to jump up a step when the FA Cup semi-finals come around. But after their heroics, or in the final, I should say, but after their heroics in the semi, who's to say they can't? What an occasion it was at Wembley. I know there's controversy over playing semi-finals at Wembley and they might be justified, but that was a stage worthy of a game like that. From 2-0 down, 3-2 Watford won, and they're now through to take on Manchester City in the final. Amazing goals and an amazing fight back.
That was a proper semi-final.
Yeah, it was great,
the 124 hours prior to that, and I can say this as a City fan, I don't think really lived up to the billing, but that one certainly did. And two clubs, I think they're 7th and 8th in the Premier League. So this was, you know, a clash of the best of the rest, really, outside the top six, who were obviously miles in front. I feel desperately sorry for Wolves because I think their season probably deserves a cup final. You can say the same about Watford, of course, as well, who've been revitalised under Javi Garcia. I mean, to be honest, I tipped them for relegation at the start of the season, and I thought I was on a pretty safe wicket with that. But they've been superb, and they've got a fighting spirit. They've got quality. I mean, that goal by De La Foye, the first one, is astonishing in its execution. Troy Deeney is their beating heart. He's like the Matt Simon of Watford, isn't he?
Yeah. The way he talks as well, he's just so candid.
He talks the talk, but he walks the walk.
Yeah.
And they'll enjoy themselves at Wembley, whatever the score is. First time there since 1984. Congratulations to them.
And I added a little bit of magic to the cup because the FA Cup, I got caught like...
it's nice that it's changing, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
We say FFA ahead of FA these days.
But no, it's because the FA Cup sort of lost a bit of its luster over the years. And for, you know, you get this fairy tale, you know, Watford down 2-0 not long to go and they managed to scrape back and get a winner. It's brought a little bit of that old passion back because I remember as a kid growing up, you just had to watch the FA Cup. And Simon, you would know what it was like. It was the only game we had.
I was a kid before the Foxtel era came in. You had one game a year live, the FA Cup final.
Well, let me tell you, I don't know whether you got this in Australia, but in England, the Cup final day used to be a whole day of broadcasting, not just on BBC, but on ITV as well. The whole day was taken over. You used to have Cup final mastermind and Cup final question of sport and, you know, then the ride on the team bus with the camera, which in those days was something really that you didn't see an awful lot of. It felt so special. In fact, I remember going to my first Cup final, 1981, which shows how old I am, for City against Tottenham, and being really disappointed with how scruffy Wembley was because it looked so beautiful on the, you know, on the TV pictures when you grew up as a kid. It looked to be this most perfect stadium, and you got there and, you know, like mangy dogs roaming outside the stadium. It was pretty horrible. But, it was very, very special. And I agree with Cozzy. It's nice to see that those two teams made it a very special semi-final.
I reckon I'm speaking for hundreds of thousands in Australia. The FA Cup final's the game that got us into football. I was 6 years old when Liverpool played Everton in 1989. That's the first game I ever ever remember watching. That made me a football fan. So, you know, it has a big impact. And thankfully the Magic, you know, is still around. People want to bin it, and it certainly has changed, but it does provide special moments like last night. A shame it won't be for Matty Ryan. He falls just short of becoming another Australian to play in the FA Cup final. He would have known he was up against it. Man City obviously did it pretty comfortably, even though the scoreline was only 1-0. But there's been a lot of talk about Man City's crowds, Simon. This is a serious subject. This is not a dig, because title race, Wednesday night. I mean, there weren't as many City fans as people thought at Wembley. Wednesday night against Cardiff, a big game in the title race. Mate, the stadium was half empty. I mean, at this crucial time, I mean, Liverpool fans are selling their tickets for a couple thousand pounds for any game at the moment. And City fans, it was half empty.
Well,
what's the deal with that?
Look, also remember, you know, Liverpool haven't won the Premier League in nearly 30 years. City have.
Okay, so is there a bit of complacency maybe then?
Yeah, possibly. I think there's a few other reasons. They're not excuses, because they should, you know, we should be selling the stadium out. City still have a largely very working class fan base. You could say the same about Liverpool, of course, but City Stadium is bigger, at least marginally. And a lot of those supporters can't afford these games. You know, a trip down to London for the semi-final, it's expensive. And getting back to the north, let me tell you, people in Australia might not realise this, but getting back to the north after a 5:30 kickoff in London is not easy. The motorways are clogged, particularly up to Manchester. The M6 is, I mean, it's a car park, essentially. The trains don't always run. These are not excuses. You should be selling out your allocation. City still, remember...
I'm more worried about the home game.
Yeah, Cardiff. No, I agree, and I'm coming on to that. But City, remember, you know, I've been a City fan since I've been 5 years old, ever since I could walk. We've had 30, 35 years of crap, essentially. And not only that, we had the biggest club in the world on our doorstep. So this successful era is brilliant, but it's very new. And we still haven't built that huge fan base that the Liverpools, the Man Uniteds, the Arsenals have got. It's growing. I walk around Sydney and Melbourne now, and occasionally you'll see City shirts. I mean, that just never happened 20, 30 years ago. We were non-existent. So it's changing, but it's a slow change. And the traditional fan base is still the one that goes every week. Now, before people start having a crack at our crowds, remember when we were in the third division, which is only 20 years ago, we averaged over 30,000 in the third division. So City are a big club. It's just that in, you know, massive terms, to use the term that United fans love to throw at us, we're not quite there yet. It might take another generation. But the fact is, and here's the crucial bit, in 1988, City's average attendance when we're in the old second division was 19,000. 10 years later in the third division, it was 30,000. 10 years after that, it was 40,000. Now, we're at 50,000. We're still short of capacity. Mm. You name me another club that's gone from 19,000 30 years ago to 50,000. Most clubs have stayed around the same, so it's growing.
It's growing. But they weren't there on Wednesday night against
Correct.
Cardiff, which was interesting. And Liverpool responded really well on Saturday morning over here, Friday night game in the UK. It was a tough game on paper, away to Southampton, battling relegation. It was level in about the 80th minute, and then Mohamed Salah broke his 9-game scoring drought and put one in the back of the net, and Jordan Henderson silenced some of the haters by scoring the third. Big win, Liverpool, one of their toughest games out of the way, and it just puts pressure on City yet again in this enthralling title race.
It's great that there is this kind of pressure, that you've got this, it's a point apart. City do have the game in hand.
2 points now.
Two.
Liverpool back.
Yeah, but it's still a game in hand. They can win it. So there is a bit of pressure. It's not a fait accompli like it has been in the past with City, you know, being that far ahead. I think it's great, the club like Liverpool as well, that have gone so long without success after, you know, dominating the 80s like they did. They won everything in the 80s consistently. And then it became basically the Man United era after that, where they dominated for a long time. Chelsea had their little bit in between. It's been Man City that have been the team that have captured it. But Liverpool have been so long. Is it 29 years now, Simon?
29. Yeah, 1990, the last time. Yeah.
So that's a long time between drinks. So it's good to see that this kind of competition is alive and flourishing. But the big question is, and Robbie Slater referred to this, is whether they can handle the pressure. It's not that long ago that they had a 5 or 6 point gap, and they did drop their bundle for a while there.
10 points at Christmas.
They've only lost one game, though, for the season. They're 2 points off their highest ever Premier League total, and they're winning late at the moment.
Scoring a lot of late goals.
I don't think you can fault too much of what Liverpool have done. It's just that they're up against an unbelievable side. You know, if it wasn't for City and the kind of quality they have, Liverpool would be 10 points ahead now, and they'd have the title wrapped up. They're just up against an absolute juggernaut. They're up against the best single-season team in Premier League history. So it was never going to be easy. It was always going to be tight. And Liverpool are playing out of their skins when you look at their points number and the fact they've only lost one game all season long. But they've got a tricky one out of the way. They've got Chelsea at home coming up. And then it does get a lot easier for them, their run in. There'll be pressure attached, but on paper, in terms of opponents, City have Burnley away, United away. Those two games stand out.
And Spurs
as well at home. The Burnley one. Burnley are going well. And they still aren't clear in the relegation fight.
Look, it's
really going
to
be tight.
I think it's going to go right down to the wire. Liverpool have done extraordinarily well. And it's a tribute to Jurgen Klopp that his squad has a lot more quality this year and a lot more resilience. I mean, last year, you know, they didn't lose the title again in the games against the teams from the top six. They lost it by slipping up against, with respect, the Watfords, the Burnleys away from home. This year, they haven't done that. They found a way to win, as they did against Southampton again at the weekend. So I think it's going to be nip and tuck along the way. I agree with you. I think City have the tougher run in, and obviously they're involved in three competitions. Liverpool have just the two. But, you know, that City have got an unbelievable squad. So we'll see. But it does, you're right, it makes for an exciting race, which is good.
Same with the top four race. 3 points separates Tottenham in third from United in sixth. Bad result for Arsenal overnight, losing to Everton. I mean, that gave them a bit of a buffer in third if they'd have won that game. So that's going to go right down to the wire as well. The other leagues in Europe, Juventus so clear in Italy, it's not funny. Barcelona so clear in Spain, they don't have to worry about it. Germany is the only one that's tight. Bayern Munich had a big win over Dortmund this morning, 5-0, and it's back to 1 point now. So that's going to go, you'd think, right down to the wire. What a massive victory that was. PSG, 20 points clear with a game in hand.
There you go. They say the Premier League is the one that's boring.
What a joke that is. Look ahead to the weekend, the Sydney Derby in the A-League, which will be fantastic. That obviously stands out as the game to watch for.
Yes, well, it certainly is. And obviously, I think Tony Popovich will be hoping his old club, the Wanderers, do his current club, Perth, a little bit of a favour, take at least a point off Sydney, and then they can get the celebration started in the West if they can get the job done over the Jets. I'm fascinated to see what the crowd will be on Saturday. Obviously, the Wanderers have no chance of making the finals. Hopefully we'll get, you know, at least over 30,000. It's at ANZ, which is not the ideal venue either. Can't wait for next season to go to that new stadium in Parramatta. I think that will be the rebirth of the Wanderers, in my opinion.
They've just got to get it right on the park.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's been their problem this season. And, I mean, I've done a number of Wanderers games the Friday nights, and to listen to the punters and the pods generally position right near where, especially at ANZ, where the Wanderers players walk in, and they have copped some stick from their fans. And even during the course of the game, they're just not happy. And they did have rusted on supporters that expected a lot. Now it's a different kettle of fish. Look, they have turned a bit of a corner. They played some better stuff, but a few of the naive mistakes came back on Saturday night against the Jets. You know, leading 2-0
with another
comfortable.
with another mistake.
Another mistake, which, you know, you've got to look at it. It was a hard one to defend, but you'd think certainly he's experienced enough to be able to get that one out of the net rather than into it like he did. But he's made a number of mistakes this season, and that's probably cost his team. But the whole club, I think, will be looking forward to that move. The stadium looks fantastic. You know, Marcus Babbel looks like he's there to stay. He's not going anywhere. So they've got to get themselves and start to build a squad again and build that momentum like they had in the Tony Popovich era.
Needs to get that defence right, doesn't he? I mean, you look at their forward line now, whether Riera will be there next season, I very much doubt, but you never know. But at the moment, as it stands, they've got Riera, they've got Bonavazzi, they've got Baum Johan, they've got Mitch Duke, they've got Bruce Kamau. There's probably one or two others that I've forgotten. They've got some good youngsters as well. They look to have plenty going forward. You'd think that there's goals in that team. The problem is that they just make too many defensive mistakes.
Well, Bruce Kamau's playing as a fullback.
He is at the moment because they're short on numbers. Yep. Josh Risden has missed sort of half the season with one thing and another, international commitments, injuries.
Patrick Ziegler.
Patrick Ziegler, you know, barely sighted because he's
he was
he's had
good
knee
though
problems.
when he did come into the side, Simon. He did look good and tighten things up a bit.
But I think that'll be the area that Babbel will obviously look to strengthen during the offseason. And you know, with respect to Vedran, who I like very much, but maybe a goalkeeper as well.
Trouble is, there's not a lot of kids around goalkeepers in Australia. You know, looking even from an NPL point of view, there's not.
How is that possible? Isn't that Australia's traditional strength?
We lose goalkeepers, then we're really in trouble.
It has been.
Nick Suman, they rate highly. Who's his number two there at Western Sydney?
Yeah, I watched him early in the piece because he did get a run of games for a while there, and I have questions over him as well.
Hey, Cozzy, just on that, sorry, they had John Hall there briefly, the Wanderers, last season. What's happened to John Hall? I know he was a kid that you rated quite highly at Adelaide.
I thought he was great. Hawley was actually an exceptional tennis player.
Yeah.
And he was almost played football like he was playing tennis. It was pretty casual. He had a big, long stride. He used to make saves that were unorthodox, but he'd make the saves. And I remember used to have discussions with people as interested as a goalkeeper coach at United saying, I don't care about his feet. He's getting his hands to it. So, you know, and that gets back to that broader question, I guess, you ask about young keepers coming through. And I mean, I talk a lot to Jimmy Fraser and him and Ronnie Corrie. You know, you look at the players that they've developed, the goalkeepers, you know, Mark Bosnich, our Fox stable mate, just for one, Mark Schwarzer, there's another one. Jelko Kalic, they look at the keepers coming through, and it still goes back to what I guess coaches say about outfield players as well, and the structure of goalkeeper training has changed a fair bit. But you're right, I think there does need to be a keeper signed at the Wanderers to put some pressure on Vedran. And he's had an outstanding career when you think about it, but where do you get them from? Do you bring in a keeper like Mark Rudin did from overseas?
That one's paid off.
Well, it has, and now he's signed at Western Melbourne next season as well, by the way, from what I understand.
Right. That's a scoop.
So maybe well, Mark Rudin is going
I think
there.
That's a pretty good sign that Rudin might be on the move. Oh, God, the worst kept secret in Australian football, that one. If
it, I wonder how they're going to announce it. Well, they just leave it and Rudin will turn up for the first game of the season.
Listen, if we announce this one, that might be giving things away.
No, who's your coach? We're not telling you until the first game.
But we've signed 20 players.
Magnificent. Perth could lift, well, not lift the Premier's plate, but win the Premier's plate on the weekend. If Sydney don't beat Western Sydney and Perth beat Newcastle, it's out to 8 points at least with two games to go. So that'd be it done. But I understand they'll get the Premier's plate final
against
round.
Wellington.
Against Wellington at home, so they can celebrate it before the final. So that's another one to look out for. Boys, we're out of time. Cozzy, you have to go and record the A-League Hour. I just want to make one final point. Apologies, I called Richard Toombs last week. His name is Richard Toombs, the former Wallaby who was tragically made a quadriplegic in a football game. The fundraiser was for him last week. Important we get that name right. Richard Toombs, it was a great cause and great to talk about it last week. Cozzy, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
A pleasure.
Great to have you here. We went on a few tangents today, but you know what? Sometimes that's healthy to get some of those discussion points out there. And we talk about them amongst ourselves so often in football circles. I'm sure the people out there probably enjoyed listening to some views on what can be done in the game to lift things up a notch or two. Simon, thanks very much.
Great stuff. Cheers, Garby. Cheers, Cozzy.
Tune into the boys on Wednesday for the Ballcast. Murray, Harps and Speedy. They'll have all your football action there for you. And get there on Wednesday night. Watch Oscar, Hulk and Elkerson in the Champions League and build up to another big weekend in the A-League.